We just acknowledged the Capital Region Community Foundation here a second ago as a financial supporter of WKAR Radio. I want to point out we're grateful for the support of all of you who contribute to WKAR, whatever the sum may be, $50, $1,000. The difference you make is extremely important. Our programming is different and better in large part due to you. So please help us continue to bring extraordinary programs to you and your community. Please use the Give Now button at WKAR.org. Welcome back to Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. A proposal to build a $133 million bus rapid transit line between downtown Lansing and Meridian Township has been attracting more interest lately. The federally funded line would create two lanes on Michigan and Grand River Avenues, both dedicated to rapid transit buses. It would also specify dedicated lanes for drivers turning left and making U-turns. Supporters say the line would increase capacity, improve traffic and safety, and boost the economy. Skeptics and opponents of the plan appear to have become more numerous and more vocal since the beginning of the year. Some of them are saying that the line will prevent left turns and worsen traffic for drivers. Some Meridian Township business owners say it will hurt their businesses. We'll be hearing differing views on the BRT project here in the next few days. Today we're going to be hearing from a proponent of the plan. Deb Alexander is Assistant Executive Director of the Capital Area Transportation Authority, which is the Bus Rapid Transit Project Manager, CATA. Deb Alexander, welcome back to Current State.
Hi, how are you, Mark?
I am well, thank you. You believe firmly in this as a potentially powerful force in economic growth, in part because you say it's good for many, many thousands of CATA customers. Take just a minute here and explain for us the biggest reasons why and how this BRT is a good idea.
The BRT, so I would say that it's not just me, but CATA believes in this project because we currently have a capacity challenge. We can't grow public transportation in this region without modifying the infrastructure and how we operate as a transportation network. So CATA could indeed continue to add more buses to our Route 1 service, but we would then have a greater impact on the auto, the ability of the auto to move smoothly through the corridor. So in an effort to try to work with our transportation partners, we've been studying what are the best solutions and using our existing demand and data to feed into traffic models, which show us that indeed by removing the buses from the auto lanes, that the auto traffic gains more smooth operation and more capacity, as does the transit system, because we can continue to expand service as demand continues to grow without having an impact on the auto. In addition to that, we are growing in the number of passengers who utilize us, and as those of maybe yourself as well know that the millennial generation is more interested in using public transportation and live in the urban area.
You've anticipated my next question. That was exactly where I was going next. That usage patterns are changing here.
That's right. That is exactly right. Not just in the millennials, but also, of course, in the baby boomer generation. And national statistics will show you that both the AARP through AARP, that the senior wants to age in place and live in an urban community so that they have activities they can go to, and the millennial wants to live in the urban community where it's vibrant and lots of things to do, including wonderful placemaking activities. So this BRT project will help to build that infrastructure that can support that kind of change in the desires of the future communities.
How many people use Route 1 now?
1.7 million trips are taken on Route 1 in any annual year.
Now, you've told me that you also think that there are misunderstandings about this plan, especially about the impact that dedicated bus lanes and dedicated left turn lanes are going to have on traffic. Take just a minute and clarify the impact that these dedicated lanes will have on drivers making a left turn, for example.
Right. So left turns are still going to be available at most intersections. And in addition, There will be 9 new intersections added, and those are going to be added in areas where there are long stretches of roadway without any ability for a pedestrian to cross, for example. A good example of that would be at Brookfield, for example. There's a long stretch between Hagedorn and Northwind, which is where the Whole Foods is. There is no ability to cross, so there would be a new signal added at Brookfield. These signals will allow for controlled environmental, signalized controlled turns, left turns, and many of them will also have the ability to do U-turns. This is, according to the Federal Transit Administration, a 40%, potentially 40% improvement in a reduction in accidents. So if we have a lot of accidents that occur along this roadway today, and if we can certainly improve safety by reducing the risk of making those left turns, it's in everyone's best interest. So it isn't eliminating the ability to turn left. It's putting those very dangerous maneuvers into a controlled environment.
But you've acknowledged misunderstandings. What is it about this landscape people are misunderstanding?
Well, I think there's a perception that making the controlling where you can turn left instead of allowing free left turns will change people's decisions about where they're going to stop and go, what businesses they're going to utilize, and so forth, because there's a perception that it's inconvenient to go another eighth of a mile or so and do a U-turn, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's not been proven in a study done by the state of Utah. They did a pre- and post-survey just to adding medians, not necessarily the BRT, but just medians, and it demonstrated that 85% of the businesses who thought they were going to be negatively impacted after the medians were put in either increased sales or had no impact on sales. So our studies or our research indicates to us that that the perceptions aren't necessarily founded in facts.
Deb Alexander is our guest. Deb is the Assistant Executive Director of the Capital Area Transportation Authority, which is the project manager for a proposed bus rapid transit line, which would basically replace, I guess, is not an understatement. It would basically be implemented along Route 1, which goes from downtown Lansing to the Okemos Mire on Grand River. Clarify another matter here for us, Deb. There is no plan to enlarge the road, correct?
We are working within the right of way, but not necessarily curb to curb. So there will be some movement of curb lines in some areas, but not all areas.
But the dedicated bus line, would eliminate a lane of car traffic, correct?
Depends on where you are, because this roadway is very dynamic now, today. So, for example, in the downtown Lansing area, the auto volumes today don't warrant a number of lanes that are available. So they would go to one auto lane in each direction in the downtown Lansing area. However, once you hit 127, two lanes of traffic that exist today in either direction would remain. In the East Lansing area, the two lanes going eastbound will remain, and then we will go to two lanes going in the westbound direction instead of the three that are there. And then the two lanes in each direction will remain from Hagedorn or from Bogue Street all the way out to the end of the BRT line.
Well, I know that the dedicated bus lanes do concern. This does worry some people. I mean, you will hear people say, "Hey, Grand River in downtown East Lansing is apt to be pretty crowded as it is. If you dedicate a lane, I beg your pardon, in each direction, and only allow buses there, how do you respond to people who worry about that?"
Well, we have extremely professional individuals who deal with this all the time working with us, both on our consultant team, also with all of the traffic engineers from MDOT and from the jurisdictions along the corridor, who have been actively engaged with reviewing the data and the information that's being developed as a result of the project. All of our traffic models indicate, as I've said, that there's an increase in the amount of capacity and the smooth operation of the auto lanes because you remove the frequently stopping buses from those auto lanes today. So one might argue that the buses are part of what is causing the volume, what appears to be lots of volumes and stoppages on the corridor today, because it's true. When we stop, cars behind us, maybe yourself even, Mark, don't want to sit there, so you make an erratic movement to go around the bus. And that occurs behind, you know, as the waiting traffic behind makes that same maneuver. So all of that causes a less smooth, an unsmooth operation.
I want to make clear to our listeners that on Friday we will be hearing from an opponent of the plan, a Meridian Township business owner. Shirley Decker is the co-owner of Mertz Meats, right just a stone's throw from Grand River and Marsh Road. So Shirley will be on the air. I know there has been, you know, we're all aware of the wild reception for the East Lansing Whole Foods store. And I wasn't there, but I know that the store's team leader told a town hall forum in March that the retailer would not have located there in the first place if a rapid transit line had been there. It doesn't mean they're leaving now, but just the same, here we're talking about an experienced, successful retailer. This is hardly an endorsement of the plan. What? How do you respond to that kind of criticism from a retailer suggesting that the proposal is bad for business?
Well, I can tell you that there have been a number of leaders within Meridian Township who have reached out to Whole Foods Corporation, and they don't support the position that was stated by their local manager. They had actually a statement made to the Meridian Township EDC member is that they're very excited about the project and that they knew the project was going to be there. And that they are not against the project. So I am going to officially reach out to them and hopefully get an official statement from them, from the corporation.
And clarify one more thing. We're down to less than a minute, but clarify for us, please. Are you at CATA, or is the community, let's just say, obligated to build this, or could it still not happen?
Right. It could not happen. We have to meet a lot of criteria for this to occur, and the project itself has to stand as a good investment for the federal government. And so we continue to work towards that outcome. Right now, all indications are that it has clearly met the criteria for making it a great investment. And so the federal government is giving me indications that they're ready to move the project forward.
Okay.
Now, we have still got a long way to go. We're at 30% engineering, and we've got to get all the way to 100% before they would actually issue some kind of agreement to move forward.
Deb, you've helped shed a lot of light on this here. We appreciate your time. Deb Alexander, Assistant Executive Director of the Capital Area Transportation Authority, which is the project manager for the proposed bus rapid transit line between downtown Lansing and Meridian Township. Thank you, Deb.
Thank you.
Coming up on Current State, since 1968, Cristo Rey Community Center has been working to provide access to food, medical care, and counseling for the most vulnerable in the Lansing community. We'll catch up with Executive Director Joe Garcia to find out what's new and what's been happening at Cristo Rey since we last spoke. That's on the way on Neighbors in Action. Few figures in Michigan history are as well known as Henry Ford, but the author of a new book about Ford believes that others deserve much of the credit for the inventions of the automobile and the assembly line. Scott Pohl talked with Lawrence Goldstone about his book. What's it called, Scott?
Well, Mark, it's called Drive, Henry Ford, George Selden, and the Race to Invent the Auto Age. In the book, Goldstone points out that others, including Lansing's Ransom Olds, did more of the actual inventing than Ford did. I asked Lawrence Goldstone about the pressure to find something new to say about a man whose history is as well documented as Henry Ford's.
I have found, and as my wife, she's also a historian, that depending on what angle you come at something from, there is new material. I did not take on Henry Ford until I had done a previous book on innovation called Birdman about the Wright brothers and Glenn Curtis. And Ford played a possible pivotal role, although albeit a small one, And he got me curious, and I began to look, and I realized that the angle that I was looking at Ford from was not had not been taken by other historians.
And that angle is?
Well, I was more interested in Ford as his role in the process of innovation, in the innovation cycle that took place in the end of the 19th and early 20th century, than I was in all the personality foibles. I don't really talk about a lot of things that many of the biographies focus on, but I am much more interested in Ford's role as a businessman, as an innovator, as an inventor, or a non-inventor. And what I discovered was that he was eerily similar to Steve Jobs.
I'm glad you brought up the parallel you see with Steve Jobs. You compare Ford to Steve Jobs in terms of having an ability to improve products based on the demands of the marketplace as opposed to being an inventor. Of his skills, was that of being a salesman, maybe, his greatest skill of all?
That was part of it. Now, I know you had asked me to read, and that is actually the paragraph that I had chosen. So would you like me to do that now?
Yeah, let's do that now.
Okay, here goes. Many Americans believe that Henry Ford invented the modern automobile, or at least the assembly line and mass production. He did neither. In fact, there is no significant invention in automotive technology for which Ford could personally take credit. Nor was he the first man to consider the egalitarian possibilities of automobile marketing. Ford's genius, like that of Steve Jobs a century later, was in his ability to improve and to adapt to the demands of the marketplace virtually any process or component with which he came in contact. That is a sum up, pretty much, of what I thought his skills were. Now, to go back and answer your question, Ford would have bristled at the thought of being called a salesman. He believed in sales, but he would not have seen himself as a salesman. But in fact, he was so natural at it that he succeeded in selling without really making an attempt to cultivate sales expertise or techniques.
Steve Jobs, of course, had Steve Wozniak doing the inventing, if that's the right word. Did Henry Ford have a version of a Steve Wozniak?
Henry Ford had a string of versions. He didn't have the one person. But Henry Ford, one of his other skills was a preternatural ability to judge character and to judge people who could help him and stay with him as long as he needed them and then leave. For example, Ford famously did not drink, did not smoke, did not carouse, and looked down on anyone who did. He thought these were terrible flaws of character. Yet when he needed someone to build auto bodies early on, he chose the Dodge brothers, who were two hard-drinking, brawling, foul-mouthed, everything that Ford would not have liked. I mean, they both died basically of, supposedly died of the flu, but they basically died of cirrhosis. Later on, when he needed someone to set up mass production, Ford knew nothing about assembly lines and mass production. He hired a man named Walter Flanders, who was worse than the Dodge brothers. He also was a heavy drinker. He also was a bar fighter, and he was a notorious womanizer. And each of these hires, the Dodge brothers, Walter Flanders, Harold Wills, who was a brilliant engineer. He hired a man named Norval Hawkins to run his sales force right after Hawkins was released from prison for embezzlement. None of these people stayed with him. Eventually, he got rid of everyone. Somebody called it the Ford Alumni Club. So he didn't have a Steve Wozniak, but what he had was an ability to choose people to perform tasks that he could not or should not perform himself, get everything he could out of them, and then cast them aside.
My guest is Lawrence Goldstone. His new book is Drive, Henry Ford, George Selden, and the Race to Invent the Auto Age. Now, the other man mentioned in the title of your book is George Selden. That's a name that will be new to some, recognizable but maybe still fuzzy to others. Remind us of who George Selden is.
George Selden was the son of a judge who turned down the opportunity to be Lincoln's vice president in 1864, who defended Susan B. Anthony. Selden himself became a patent lawyer but was also an inventor. And in the late 1870s, built a prototypical motor that I kind of ran a little, and designed and was going to put this motor, a new invention, the internal combustion engine, which was new, using a new fuel, gasoline. Remember, the first refinery was not built in the United States until basically 1860. And take that new fuel and this new kind of motor and mount it in what he called a road carriage. And he applied for a patent in 1879 and didn't get the patent. And because he was a patent lawyer and he knew he was ahead of his time and he had no money to actually build it, he kept the patent in play until 1896 when it was finally granted. He kept revising it. And that patent, which was for something that was never built, was ultimately bought up by a consortium that had also bought up a company that was running a fleet of electric taxis in New York City. And because the Whitney cabal needed money, they had bought up the electric taxi company and were running it into the ground, and they were going to be sued by their investors. They needed money. They bought Selden's patent. They said, this is the controlling patent on all automobiles, and they proceeded to sue everyone in sight. So Selden himself was long out of it by then, but Selden's vision of a road carriage, what we now would call an automobile, powered by a gasoline internal combustion engine, that vision remained.
What was Selden's relationship to Ford?
Selden actually had no relationship to Ford until 1907, I believe. Selden was completely out of it. By the time Selden got his patent, he thought people were going to come and solicit him, and no one did. And he was in Rochester, New York, as a patent lawyer. Didn't have a lot of money. When the Whitney people bought up his patent, they paid him a certain amount of money plus royalties. The Whitney company, the electric vehicle company was the name of the company, went and essentially sued everyone. A group of people that they sued got together and formed a sub-monopoly. Ford would not join. They would not let Ford in. Ford continued to produce automobiles, and they sued him. He was one of the many independent automakers that were sued. And during the course of the lawsuit in 1907, George Selden was brought to New York with somebody built his supposed road carriage, which was not, that's a whole other story. It wasn't really anything and couldn't run. And that was the first time in 1907, the first time and the last time that Henry Ford laid eyes on George Selden.
Your cast of characters includes names that most of us are familiar with to one extent or another, including Carl Benz and Lewis Chevrolet. You also include Lansing's favorite son, Ransom Olds. What role does he play in your book?
Ransom Olds actually did many of the things that Henry Ford got credit for. He was the first man to build an automobile on what could be called an assembly line. He was the first man to market automobiles to people other than the rich. The famous curved dash Olds. He had a wonderful advertising slogan, "Come ride with me, Lucille, in my brand new Oldsmobile." Ransom Olds may well have ended up getting many of the accolades that have gone to Ford. One of the things Ford had that Ransom Olds did not have was an absolute distrust of money people. Ford would take in investors, do what he wants, infuriate them, and then leave without producing the product that he said he would produce, and then move on to somebody else. And he did this until a company came along and a group of investors came along that were willing to back him in doing exactly what he wanted. And then he built his cars, and then he ultimately bought them out. Ransom Olds was different. He was building the curved dash Olds. It sold 4,000 vehicles in 1904, which was a stunning amount. He was building them on an assembly line. He had exactly the right idea of marketing. He took in some investors to expand. Those investors wanted to build the big luxury cars that they thought everybody wanted, the big expensive cars, $3,000 and $4,000 at the time, which was ridiculously expensive. The curved dash Olds was going for $650. And they essentially forced him out of his own company. He went back into business in REO, Ransom E. Olds, built the REO Speedwagon, which later became the name of a rock group, but never really made it to the degree that his vision should have allowed.
The book is Drive, Henry Ford, George Selden, and the Race to Invent the Auto Age. The author is Lawrence Goldstone. Thank you for joining us on Current State.
Thank you, Scott.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.
And coming up on the program, in Michigan, up north is more a state of mind than a physical orientation. It's a phenomenon we cherish in the Great Lakes State. Coming up, Current State's Kevin Labrie takes us to what might actually be the gateway to the north. That and more after the break on Current State. Current State on 90.5 WKAR. It's fascinating to ponder why some organisms are capable of living so many years and others live so few years. Last week in Livingston County, they captured a turtle. This is a Blanding's turtle. Never heard of it. Blanding's turtle. They're pretty sure this turtle is at least 83 years of age. This happened at a U of M forest reserve, and I'm reading from the Detroit News now here. Researchers say it's one of the oldest known freshwater turtles and the oldest well-documented Blanding's turtle. Edwin S. George Reserve near Pinckney, the reptile known as 3R11L, was first captured and marked in 1954. So they've been aware, they were aware of this turtle 62 years ago, and at that time they estimated it to be about 20 years of age. And lo and behold, in 2016, they rediscover this turtle, and it would appear to be late in its life, but it's still alive and well at 83 years of age. Current State on WKAR, the Cristo Rey Community Center is a basic needs service center open to anyone in need. Their focus is on food, medical, and counseling access for low-income and vulnerable populations. Back in 2013, Joe Garcia had just become the executive director of CRCC, and he joined us on Current State to talk about the organization. For our Neighbors in Action segment today, Joe's back in our studio to update us on what's been happening with Cristo Rey. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
You offer a great variety of services. Can you highlight some of the real biggies here for our listeners?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a medical family practice where on an annual basis, we see about 7,000 patients. You know, within that, we have a prescription drug program that last year we connected families in need with over $1.1 million worth of retail value of prescription medications. Mm. In our counseling services, we do a variety of programs in the area of prevention and treatment of substance use disorders. You know, we do assessments, diagnosis, treatment planning, case management work. We do group and individual training, and we have a special emphasis on women's specialties. We help a lot of women through some of these challenging issues within the area of substance use disorders.
Tell us a little bit, go a little bit deeper with us on the medical clinic, though. You mentioned the prescription drugs that you're able to make available for people. For people who need them, what other services medically do you offer?
Medically, we have a pediatrician there, so we're treating a lot of babies and infants and toddlers there, and their moms, and we do a little value add as far as that goes, and we help educate the mom on how to take better care of their children as well. Just more of a value add type of a service, but just like you would go in for to a doctor as well. You know, you got a sore throat, you have this, you have that. we're going to address those particular medical needs. We operate like a family practice. So if someone's coming to this to our medical practice, they're going to schedule an appointment. They're going to see Dr. Leisure Martin. They're going to see the nurse practitioner, Carney, or Dr. Cook, who's been there forever for us. And so the patient and certainly the provider have a good will have a good relationship, you know, through along the process. So again, similar to how we work.
Do you have to turn some people away?
We could if it were a safety issue, but no. No,
you're not swamped with people coming in that you don't have time or personnel to see. You're able to satisfy.
Yeah, fortunately, right now we're able to satisfy the need that presents us. And like I said, we have two part-time physicians, and we have three nurse practitioners, and we're meeting the need there.
Tell us a little bit more about the counseling you offer. You did talk about the substance abuse assistance that mm-hmm. you offer. What other kinds of counseling do you find yourself doing a lot of?
Well, there's a lot of group and individual therapy as it relates to, you know, helping somebody, you know, navigate, work through the struggles that substance abuse or even you know, mild to moderate level mental illness can cause. Mm-hmm. You know, we can have an individual I'm going to generalize here, certainly can't get too specific, but we'll have an individual who's struggling, who's ready to go out to the Walmart and pick up a firearm and end it. Working with an individual like that and help them, you know, understand, meet them where they're at, work with them to in short order. Helping them understand that, you know, there's a path for them, there's a place for them, you know, getting them in a better place. A particular person that I mentioned with that example is actually real, and we have this individual is taking college classes now, has a job, has a much better great outlook.
Came close to suicide or
yes,
contemplated suicide.
Absolutely, you know, those issues are real here in Lansing, Michigan. And we as others in the community, work very diligently to help those individuals.
Joe Garcia is executive director of the Crystal Ray Community Center here on Neighbors in Action. When the organization first started in the 60s, the majority of people you helped were in the Hispanic community. I know that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about who you serve.
Well, we serve anyone who has a need. There is no prerequisite for care. But, back in the 60s when Crystal Ray first was established, the north end of town was primarily Hispanic, and it was an operation, as they say, of people helping people, you know, and that nearly 50 years ago. And that in itself has not changed. We're all about that. We're individuals helping others in the spirit of that original effort back in the 60s.
Do you think there are non-Hispanic people who don't think about availing themselves of the services you offer because they're not Hispanic?
I would definitely think that that's the case. And, you know, I'd certainly love to be able to change that perspective, but I get it. I mean, look at this.
Yeah.
Our name, Crystal Ray.
Sure.
Crystal Ray is Spanish in itself. Well, translated to English, that's Christ the King.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not, they think that we're a Spanish-only or Hispanic-only operation. Some others think that we're a Catholic-only. And that's how come I use it, where there is no prerequisite to care. We're there to help individuals regardless of ethnicity, regardless of anything. If they need us, we're going to be there for them.
Do you work with undocumented immigrants?
Yes, we do, and we would. We in our medical clinic, if someone comes in, if they don't have insurance, we're going to see them. We're going to help that individual there. If they need food, we're going to help provide them. If they need a meal, we're going to provide that as well. There are some services that we wouldn't be able to offer because of the requirements. We have a financial empowerment type of a program that requires a certain amount of information, In order to move forward, they have to live in the city, certain requirements like that. The prescription drug effort that we have would be another one, because there we're actually working with pharmaceutical companies and their foundations to make this possible. They have certain requirements that are going to be needed in place to be able to provide those particular services.
I know you've been able to succeed through a variety of partnerships. Tell us about some of those.
Great. I'd love to. Spiro Health Systems is a wonderful partner to us. We utilize their electronic medical record system, and that's really helped us improve our quality of care in our family practice. We're able to look at a person's medical history a little bit closer, you know, and that's certainly helpful in quality of care. But this particular system has really helped us operationally as well. With our reimbursement collection and a lot of other areas. Ingham Health Plan is another. I mean, they are enhancing our reimbursement amounts for preventative care services that we provide to folks who are on Medicaid. City of Lansing is a great partner with Financial Empowerment. You know, again, where we're helping the community understand better and operate and manage their home economics.
You got a golf outing coming up. It's the first day of June.
Yeah,
we got to spend a minute talking about golf here. Tell us about that.
Well, thank you. We have our golf for giving effort that is Friday, June 17th, over at Wheatville Valley Golf Club. It's a fun event. You'll have a great time. But I will say with this, please, the golf is the bonus. What we do with what we raise there is there to help out those in the area of basic needs. That would be food, whether it be prepared and or grocery store type food, basic care, in the clinic and those kind of things. Again, it's important to highlight the fun, and we enjoy it and we deserve it. But also knowing that we can do good there as well.
We'll also mention you've got a 5K coming up. You got an event in September called Rock the Block. We're up against the clock, I'm afraid. But tell us your website so people can learn more.
Our website is www.cristoreycommunity.org.
Cristo Rey Community. Spell it out, right?
Spell it out,
yes. Cristo Rey Community. .org. We want to thank Joe Garcia, Executive Director of Cristo Rey, for coming in today. Thanks for the update, Joe.
Oh, thank you so much.
Current State is looking for more nominations for our Neighbors in Action feature. Please help us out. Email us your suggestions to currentstate@wkar.org. Please put Neighbors in Action in the subject line or tweet us @KARCurrentState. And please tell us a little bit about why you think they should be featured for the great work they do. Were you among the thousands of people who headed up north for the Memorial Day weekend? Well, if so, then you know those very words, up north, hold a special place in the hearts of all Michiganders. Current State's Kevin Lavery got in a little kayaking on the Ausable River last weekend. On his way up U.S. 127, Kevin stopped at what just might be Michigan's gateway to the north.
We are in the middle of the Mitten. We are in the middle of the Lower Peninsula at the Clare. Welcome to Michigan Rest Stop. Most of the time you drive into a state and you're a couple miles in and you have like this welcome center. You're smack in the middle of the state and it says, welcome to Michigan.
My name's George Lahar. I'm from Birch Run, Michigan. We've been coming here for a long time now. My grandfather and stuff used to bring us up here, kind of a tradition thing. You know, since probably the early 70s is when I was coming up. And we usually bring the kids too, but they're off to college right now. So they're still not, they're actually going up, but they're going to the Oscoda side. So it's nice that I brought me and the wife and then we're taking the dog for the first time.
My name is Anne Marie Clark.
And this is Dinah.
And this is Dinah.
Hi Dinah, it's good to meet you. You have a shirt that says, keep calm and head up north. So you've got the whole culture thing down.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anytime you can be up north, it's a good day. We're headed up north. Where are we going? Can you tell them where we're going?
We're going up north.
What are we going to do while we're up there?
Eat macaroni.
Well, we are going to eat macaroni. Yep. Are we going to go in a canoe?
Yeah.
Yeah, and go to the beach?
Mm-hmm.
awesome.
Macaroni always tastes better on a beach than when you're hiking, I think.
Absolutely.
And what is your name, sir?
Aaron Gregory.
Where are you guys from?
St. John's, Michigan.
Not terribly far from here.
Nope.
And you've got a couple of strapping young men here. Can I get your names, guys?
Ty Gregory.
And Evan Gregory.
You guys twins?
No, we're 2 years apart.
You look really similar.
Yeah.
What does up north mean to you guys?
I grew up in Northport, up by Traverse City. So we're going up to my mom and dad's and my grandparents' place up there. I guess up north is home to me.
Well, I know the longer I stand here, the less time you guys have to make memories. So I'm just going to say one more quick thing here. What's your favorite thing to do up north, guys?
Ride dirt bikes, hunt, anything.
But not on the dirt bike, though.
Yeah, no.
We did a lot of fishing up here, a lot of riding the quads, stuff like that with Grandpa. I mean, it was always a good time. You know, you could never go wrong. He was always a very good person. Everybody enjoyed being around him, you know. He actually, believe it or not, we just buried him today. Yeah, so it's tough. Like I told her, you know, this is what Grandpa would want, though. You know, it's a tradition. We've always went. He's, unfortunately, he couldn't come, you know. So I think he's smiling somewhere, you know.
And while our cars are essential to the race up north, a local delivery service is rushing its orders across town with a different vehicle. 2 years ago, we met Yvonne Lefebvre of Lansing's Go Green Trikes. Lefebvre is the founder and president of the Capital Area Company that makes its rounds on a fleet of cargo-carrying electric-assist tricycles. Yvonne's grown her business throughout our area since we last heard from her. WKAR's Peter Wharf met with Yvonne Lefebvre earlier this week near her Lansing East Side neighborhood base for an update. They were joined by Allen Neighborhood Center Exchange Manager John McCarthy. We'll hear from them in a moment after this 2014 flashback with Peter and Yvonne.
Now you're doing some pedaling as we're moving at about top speed, 19 miles an hour. Is that to save battery?
It is, yeah. It gives me something to do.
Okay, get a little exercise while you're at it. Nice.
That was Yvonne Lefebvre and me on her electric assist delivery trike about 2 years ago, riding through Lansing's East Side neighborhood. A lot has happened in the expansion of Go Green Trikes since our ride around.
Let's see, I launched the business Earth Day, April 22nd, 2014, so it's been just a little over 2 years now. Since then, I've quit my day job. That's fairly recent as of Earth Day this year. and I have two more trikes coming to the fleet, so that makes I've lost count. I think I have 12, including my cargo bikes, and that doesn't include the trailers. So, yeah, quite a few different vehicles at my disposal.
A few months into Go Green Trikes, Yvonne had a couple deliveries a week.
This week is my 100th delivery of the year. So whatever that works out to. I've done over 1,000 miles already just in deliveries this year. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yvonne made business and personal deliveries of all kinds on her fleet of trikes. It's not easy for her to pin down a description of a typical customer.
Different types of folks that are attracted to working with me. Not only as trikers, folks that contract with me, but also customers. You know, other business owners, small businesses that don't have their own fleet. Even ones that do have their own fleet, but may or may not have enough drivers. Also folks that have subcompact cars. There was a delivery last week from Home Depot. The box was 30 inches wide, 32 inches high, and 49 inches deep. And you're not going to fit that in a subcompact. No,
but you can fit it in this one right here.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Just in it went.
Like any other city bike rider, Yvonne Lefebvre has to live in the greater world of car and truck traffic, negotiating that sometimes contentious world where two or three wheels meet four or more.
It depends on the drivers, of course. For the most part, it's been pretty good. Mm-hmm. I have on the back of the trike, one of those orange triangles that you see for a slow moving vehicle. So that clues them in ahead of time. At night, I have running lights all over it, so people can see it. And
your running lights are hundreds of white Christmas tree lights.
Exactly, yeah. And during the Christmas season, they're actually all different colors. But yeah, for regular nighttime deliveries, they're all white.
Highly visible.
Highly visible, and I see that people are smiling when they see it, because, you know, it looks like a float going down the street. So they're already predisposed to be okay with me being there.
I've met Yvonne Lefebvre today at the Allen Neighborhood Center, where John McCarthy is exchange manager.
We have a great relationship with Yvonne. Whenever we need a delivery, she's there to deliver for us. And she also brings in our bread basket from Panera and bacon cakes on a weekly basis. Every Monday and Tuesday mornings, she's delivering the donated breads to us that we then in turn use for our food pantry on Tuesday morning.
Before working with Go Green Trikes, it was John who had to make food pantry and other Allen Center deliveries. After Go Green, McCarthy was able to save time to focus on other tasks.
It helps to know that I won't have to leave the office for a delivery. Deliveries take up a large portion of your day when you have to pack it up and, you know, go there and then come back, and it just kind of puts a wrench in your whole day. So having Yvonne to be that wrench for us really helps out.
Saving time is one thing that's grown the relationship between Go Green Trikes and the Allen Neighborhood Center. John McCarthy says it's also
the funness of Yvonne. She's a fun person to work with. And also, people really like getting their deliveries by bike. It's something, it's unique to us. It's unique to Yvonne. It's also unique to us because it's the only delivery service that we use. So whenever there is a delivery, it's Yvonne.
You know, what is it that people like about getting deliveries by bike? I mean, obviously it's Yvonne, but the bike itself is delightful too. It's got to be, just to have that pull up and make you feel good about what you're doing.
Definitely, definitely. It helps save gas and save the environment, and it brings more of a community and local feel to it. And that's really what we're about at the Allen Marketplace. We pull from so many different farmers. You know, the closest ones are a couple blocks away. The furthest ones are under 50 miles away. So it's really keeping that local in the Allen Marketplace and Allen Neighborhood Center.
The three of us move into the Allen Center building to pick up the day's delivery. Yvonne is heading to Lansing's East High School to deliver food for its Quaker Packs. East High, the Allen Center, and Go Green have partnered to help feed hungry kids fresh food in the Lansing area. We start off in the cooler.
What are you getting there, Yvonne?
I'm getting 2 boxes of eggs.
I'll step out of the way so we don't crash into each other and drop the eggs. It'd be a bad way to start the delivery.
No, I'm broken eggs, no.
The Quaker Pack Project has also given the opportunity for area growers, bakers, and other businesses to assist families and kids in need.
The green onions are from Smith Greenhouse, right down the street here in Mount Hope. The baked goods are from Glory Bee Sweet Treats.
John keeps the boxes and bags coming, sacks stuffed full of greens and other veggies, and tubs full of muffins start to fill up Yvonne's pickup bed-sized delivery crate.
The great thing about this job, Yvonne, must be combining cardio and weights.
Oh, definitely. Some days more than others. I had a delivery last week that it was lightweight, but it was out to St. John's.
St. John's?
St. John's.
Lansing to St. John's and back is just about 50 miles, give or take. I had to ask Yvonne how that half-century ride came about.
It's another fun part of my job that I like to create connections between people. And for this particular one, a friend was just diagnosed with some disease. And so a friend here in Lansing was like, I can't get there. I can't show my support until the weekend at the earliest. Can you go up and, you know, I baked this bread. Can you go take it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just cool stuff like that. Like, of course I'm going to do it. So, yeah. I love little things like that that help build community. Okay.
All right.
Safety first. They help.
All right.
With her green and white trike loaded up, That was that. Yvonne was on her way to East High School with a full load of fresh garden greens and baked treats for Lansing kids.
Out there. Thanks again, Yvonne.
Not a problem.
Yvonne Lefebvre is president and founder of Go Green Trikes in Lansing. John McCarthy is exchange manager of Allen Neighborhood Center, also in Lansing. Thanks, John. Thanks, Yvonne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Ward.
And that's Current State for today. Tomorrow on the program, tourists aren't the only people heading up north this week. The 2016 Mackinac Policy Conference gets started today on Mackinac Island. The Flint water crisis, business investment, the state of the Detroit public schools are among the hot topics this year. The Michigan Public Radio Network's Rick Pluta brings us the latest from the island tomorrow morning. Plus, it's the instrument of choice for Kermit the Frog, and Steve Martin will speak with the co-director of the Midwest Banjo Camp. Stan Werben also owns that landmark in Old Town Lansing elderly instrument. Stan Werben and Rick Pluta amongst our guests tomorrow on Current State. Our executive producer is Peter Wharf. Kevin Lavery directed the show today. Thanks also to Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, Jamie Paisley, and a technician, Drew Hill. Hope to see you tomorrow. Have a great day. It's Current State on WKAR.